Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leaving Room Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. And joining us this week again, Felipe Leon from In the Square Circle. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. We got a lot of boxing here to talk. Bradley and Pacquiao, from Joshua to Charles Martin. And then we're going to do some previews of the for next week. This coming week, Saturday fights on the PBC. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well, man. I have to say, I don't know about you guys, but I enjoyed that pay-per-view. It's been a while since I was like, you know what, I'm going to chill for a while here on a Saturday and watch pay-per-view, you know, HBO top to bottom, because I want to see every fight and every fighter on the card. And the card didn't disappoint.
No, it didn't.
Yeah,
I
agree.
Yeah, I thought it was very entertaining. I mean, listen, the Showtime card obviously didn't set the mood for nobody. Right. It was a fight that you were just like, dude, just give me something good on pay-per-view. You know, give me something good on the undercards of the Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley. I mean, we talked about it last week. We knew that we were going to have a decent show because both guys, Bradley and Pacquiao, well, let's be honest, they come to fight. They come to kind of give us what we're paying for. And that's exactly what we got. But not just with them, with the whole undercard. Everybody came to do the job. Obviously, there were some complaints about Arthur Abraham. Some people had never witnessed Arthur Abraham step in the ring. They don't understand his style and his technique of fighting, which is shell up the Joshua Kalati move, and then possibly add one of the big, big shots. I mean, I was surprised, Felipe, and how many people were bagging on the performance of Arthur Abraham.
Yeah, I was surprised as well. I mean, obviously, like you mentioned, they don't know what Arthur Abraham does, especially this Arthur Abraham, who's a little bit long on the tooth. I mean, the guy's a veteran. I mean, he's fought everybody. His biggest exposure here in the United States was some years ago in the Super Six. But I did expect a little bit more from him, but I think it was more about Gilberto Ramirez shutting him down. I think it was in the third round when he hurt him and made him do the chicken dance for a little bit. And then after that, he really shut down. So I don't understand, like you do, where the complaints were coming from.
You know,
and I think, the kid didn't stand still long enough to let Abraham into the fight, which was very smart. He boxed, he moved, he just stuck him with the jab, he kept setting up. What I loved is that he kept him on the end of his power. He was just feeling everything. The kid, tall guys can end up, like, crowding themselves a lot. And this guy, you know, Ramirez, he really likes to box. Really nice feet, good form, and he maintained it throughout the fight because it's tough with Abraham. You kind of go in, and if you go all in and throw a bunch of punches, he's hoping you get tired and he wears you out. But then it could go the other way too, and I think that's the way it went, was that he could never get untracked, and this kid never
was
tired and started letting the dude touch him. It was great. Great performance.
No, the conditioning was absolutely there, you know. And the thing too with Arthur is that exactly what you said, Gabriel. He waits for you to kind of just get tired out. He waits for you to maybe even sit there and do what Amir Khan has done for a very long time, which is, you know, wait for the receipt. But he also waits to see if you're going to pull straight back out so he can throw that right hand and land. Hold on, real quick. I'm getting distracted because of Saturday night, okay, and this is how much of a good time that we had. We all know what happens when you get a bunch of Mexicans together and stuff to watch the fight, and then all the drinking and happens after. So I had a couple of my compadres came over. You know, this is the first time in a long, long time where a bunch of us gathered up and hung out to watch the fights. And obviously, we had a great time watching the fight, but then it got a little crazy, and one of my buddies fell and broke my oven glass. So I'm getting a text right now from the guy that's actually going to be repairing it. Whether he goes, hey, is the handle broken or is it just the window itself? And I'm letting them know it's the window themselves. You know how it gets when you get, especially with tequila and Mexicans, it never ends well. Never, it just doesn't end well. And stuff.
Where were you, David, when all this stuff was happening?
I would have crashed out, bro. You know, I did the gringo move and stuff. I went upstairs and told the guys, "All right, guys, you guys have a, you know, guys, there's food on the table. I have canitas. There's canitas on the table. There's water. There's some sodas. I'll see you guys in the morning." And then all of a sudden you hear boom, man.
Wow.
Anyways.
Whatever. But to get back to Ramirez, I agree with Gabriel, and actually in the fact that he didn't crouch himself, he didn't crowd himself. And this was the best performance I ever seen from Gilberto Ramirez. I wasn't actually expecting this kind of performance from him, but good for him that he put his best performance to date as a professional in the most important fight of his life, which was the super middleweight title, which now he has become the first Mexican-born super middleweight champion
right.
in history.
I thought when you were asking about the broken handle and the broken window, I thought you were talking about Arthur Abraham, because you know maybe it's the wheels you know that are gone. On him. He's got, you know, the body looks fine, but
right.
the engine is not quite there. Can't quite pull
no.
the trigger. Needs a little bit of oil. This was incidentally a VADA tested fight. For those of you that keep that kind of score, Paulie Malignaggi, I'm thinking of you. You know, so maybe that had some sort of thing to it. It's the second time fighting in the U.S. But I think also it's his age, and Zerto did everything right. He set a pace that the old man didn't want to match, and so he stayed passive and hoped the kid would tire. And then the kid didn't tire, and he kept everything together. It was that's how you really find out, and I think people that were detractors of this card don't get. We got to see the future of Top Rank on this card. They just picked up a world title holder, a Mexican champion, first one at that division, as Felipe pointed out. This kid is very, very promotable, and it was the kind of performance you want. On the biggest stage, he gives you his best performance.
This is the guy from Sinaloa that Bob Ryan actually wanted the first time around, but he ended up getting Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. But this is the guy from Sinaloa that he actually wanted the first time around. And like you say, Gabriel, he is very promotable, and you know, and he has a nice style. Even though he was boxing and he was moving, it was entertaining. He wasn't running, which makes it a big difference.
No, he
Can
wasn't.
You imagine
he was
if,
using his
if,
size. What are you going to say? Imagine what?
Oh, just if this kid was Chavez Jr., the way he fights, and with his work ethic, be a superstar. This would be the kid that everybody wanted from Chavez Sr., not what we got.
No.
Well, now, I don't know if you saw the news, Bob Arum is calling for that fight. He wants to put that fight together, and Chavez Jr. comes out with a great excuse of why he doesn't want to face him. First, he said he didn't want to face another fighter from Sinaloa, which, you know, whatever. But the second excuse that he gives is that he doesn't want the WBO title. He wants the WBC title. So I thought that was a fresh excuse that we haven't heard in a while.
Did he say that? With his,
That's hilarious.
Did he say that in his tantarans with a bowl of Cheerios? I don't know why. Every time I think of the kid, I just think of that picture of him where he's sitting down in his tantarans and he's eating a bowl of Cheerios. And he's supposed to be training. Oh, wow, man. You know who looked impressive was Oscar Valdez. Here's another guy, too, that there's a lot of stock in him. And he gets in with the Russian Mexican who has been trained by ex-trainer of Brandon Rios, Robert Garcia. Now, I think it's fair to say the guy didn't have a whole lot left in him, but whatever he was going to try to diss out, Oscar made sure it was squeezed out of him. I thought it was a good performance, quick performance, and there wasn't enough time to find out if Gradovich had anything left. I mean, where do we put this kid at? I thought this was a great opening. There was a great way of introducing him to the new fans who bought into the pay-per-view and normally doesn't watch the cards that go on HBO or anywhere else, but had a good chance to witness what this kid's all about. I thought it was a great performance, man. I really did.
I agree also, and I think that he redeemed himself from his first performance on HBO back at the end of last year, where he reached he faced a late sub in Ruben Tamayo, and he actually didn't look all that great, but then he was able to redeem himself with this performance against Gradovich. And I think his best asset and the strategy that he used in this fight was his offense as his defense. He just didn't let Gradovich, you know, get in there and throw some punches. Gradovich is known as a Mexican Russian because he comes forward and throws a lot of punches, but we didn't see that in this fight. I mean, he did throw punches, but not as many as we believe he was gonna do it before the fight.
You know, I know some folks are gonna say, you know, they've said that I'm kind of hard or harsh with when it comes to Robert Garcia, which I don't have no problem with him at all. But here's the fact is that, because I sent this out on the tweet on that on the day of the fight and the fight was happening, I said, let's make this clear. Gradovich fights like a Robert Garcia fighter. And what I meant by that, which is no head movement, come forward, footwork is not really there, don't know how to cut off the ring, and get hit a lot. I don't really necessarily consider that as a Mexican style, man. I don't know why, but it just irks me when I hear somebody say, that's the Mexican style. I don't believe that is the Mexican style, you know? I think it's been adopted by in that term because of the old late of Julio Cesar Chavez, where he neglected to use head movement and he did take a lot more punishment and he proved that he had a solid chin. But I don't know, man. I don't know about you guys. But I just don't consider that as the Mexican style. I really don't.
I think of Salvador Sanchez when I think of classic Mexican boxing, or Ricardo Lopez. You know, Nacho Berestain has trained. How many champions does he have? It's in the 20s, like 25, 26. It could be more.
Right.
And
I think it's close to 30.
It's probably like closer to 30 at this point, right? Marquez, one of the greatest boxers of all time. That's classic Mexican boxing to me. Everything else is, you know, all that stuff is kind of crowd-pleasing aggression. It's more of a mentality than a style. And I think people get very confused.
I agree with you. You know, I'm not knocking Gradovich. I mean, I do like it when guys, they want to adopt the Mexican term and all that. But at the same time, you know, bring some finesse to it because that's what has made, in my opinion, that is what
right.
made great Mexican fighters. You know?
Eric Morales, Marco Antonio Barrera.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, Barrera could box a bit too. So could Morales. And it. Don't call it the Mexican something when it's not of the highest quality. That's just going to piss me off.
Exactly.
I mean,
now, speaking
of, people have kind of taken like the Antonio Margarito style, the Brandon Rios style, you know, that just come forward and throw punches and receive punches to give your punch, which is something that Chavez Sr. did to a certain extent, but he did it with a lot more finesse, like Gabriel says it. And I think Eric Morales and Marco Antonio Barrera and Marquez have done the same as well, that they know how to box. They're willing to risk. They're willing to risk because Floyd Mayweather knows how to box, but he's not willing to risk. But Morales and Barrera and Chavez and Marquez and Salvador Sanchez and these type of guys, they were willing to risk and get in there and get hit, but use that boxing technique and the finesse to score the better punches. And I think that truly is the Mexican style.
That's exactly where I would put the labeling at, as the Mexican style. Now, one guy that we saw that I don't think a lot of us were impressed. I was definitely not impressed with him. But at the same time, I look at him and I say, here's a guy that's got it. He does got, you know, the Mexican people behind him. But is he pay-per-view quality, guys? Jose Ramirez. Here's a guy that struggled with Manny Perez, who had a lot of game, who came out there, was taking the best of Jose Ramirez, but at the same time, giving his best, which Jose Ramirez just couldn't seem to get past. He couldn't figure out the puzzle. The right hand keep landing for him. He couldn't really hurt Manny Perez. He cut him up, but he couldn't do anything of significance to hold him off. To me, Jose Ramirez, I don't think he gets past the scale of being a pay-per-view star. I think this guy belongs and is going to belong on for a very long time on a solo book sales scale, man. I could be wrong here, but what I saw on Saturday night, guys, I was like, hey, this is not a guy that I would pay to watch on pay-per-view.
Yeah, and Freddie was saying, you know, title shot by the end of the year, and I was like, you know, it's a kid that I'm kind of – he's like a dark horse pick for me. I think, you know, he could be something. People love to come see him, and that's something that can be, I guess, developed. But, you know, you either have a relationship with the audience that they want to have. You know, they initiate on some level, like coming to your stuff and responding to it viscerally and then paying more money to see it, that you can't teach. And yet, yeah, I was thoroughly unimpressed with this performance. And I was coming in already a fan, you know. And no, he looked very hittable, but flat. There was no explosion. His muscles didn't look good to me in terms of, you know, his legs just looked kind of rubbery, and he didn't seem like he could really explode and get a lot done. And that, and when he did tire, there was no frontside offense and no turning of the body into that kind of classic boxer fencer position, and just using the jab to get things done and staying at distance. Instead, it was a shield the shield and just, I hope that I can tough this out. That's a short career recipe right there.
You know, what was weird, too, was the whole crouching, how he – I don't know if you guys noticed that. He arched his back so his head was in the front of his gloves. He shortened his height a lot with Manny Perez, and I think that's why Manny was able to really reach him and catch him a lot more than you would catch a guy that would fight tall. It was I don't know if it was an off night for the kid, but what I've seen of him, past tape of him and him being on Solo Boxeo, he is a hittable guy. He could be explosive, but to me, it's explosive against the right opponent. And obviously, Manny Perez was a guy that was supposed to be the right opponent, right? Felipe, I mean, this was a guy that had 11 losses, only had 3 fights under his belt as a winning streak. There was the unknown of finding out, could he get laid out really quick because Victor Ortiz was able to take him out? But instead, what we got was a struggle from Jose Ramirez and is he that draw? Because you even asked me one time. It's really Felipe, you asked me, is he really that draw? We're going to find out on Saturday night if all of Fresno and all the people that follow, are they going to follow him to the MGM? I mean, to Las Vegas to see this kid fight. I'm not quite sure if he is that draw.
Well, we don't know if they showed up or not. But as far as Manny Perez is a tough veteran fighter. You know, those losses, I mean, Lucas Salido, he has 13, 14 losses. I'm not comparing Manny Perez to Orlando Salido, but he's that kind of fighter who is going to give you a good fight, and he's a tough out. If Jose Ramirez, be who he may, with the following and the popularity, if he's struggling against a Manny Perez, because if you remember, he faced a guy named, I forgot his first name, but his last name is Garcia in his last fight, who is an okay fighter, but he's not as tough as Manny Perez. And if he's struggling with this kind of a guy, then Top Rank is going to be very, very careful who they match him up against so they don't, you know, ruin the goose that lays the golden eggs.
Yeah, they got to be really careful in where they're going to put this goose at right now. And like I said, I think this is to me, is a go back to the drawing board situation and throw him back onto Solo Boxeo and just, you know, take your time with him. Because obviously there are other guys to develop to become stars out of their stable, you know. Let's get down to the main event, man. You know, Manny Pacquiao was kind of written out by some folks. They thought that this was going to be his last hooray. They thought that there's a strong possibility that, you know, Timothy Bradley was going to be the victor. Because of the performance that Manny had showed against Floyd Mayweather, here on Leaving the Ring, my pick was Manny. I just couldn't see it. I said this last week. I said to every Oscar De La Hoya, there's a Sugar Shane Mosley. To every Sugar Shane Mosley, there's a Vernon Forrest. Well, to every Bradley, there's a Manny Pacquiao. And just like Manny Pacquiao, no matter how many times you put him in with Floyd, I don't think he could beat him. I don't think the best of Manny, even in his prime, was able to beat a Floyd Mayweather. We never know, but that's my opinion. So here we had Timothy Bradley get in there, and I think the more the curiosity for myself, guys, was to find out whether or not Teddy Atlas was going to add to the arsenal of what has already been developed with the former trainer Joel Diaz. Now, I did see some of the stuff that Atlas would add on to the mold of Bradley, but I'm not quite sure if it was the mold that was going to be just right to beat a Manny Pacquiao. And guess what? It just wasn't right. You know, staying flat-footed, trying to land big shots, staying in the pocket with Manny Pacquiao when Manny was still pushing you back. I saw that Timothy still had a lot of dog in him, but by those later rounds, I saw the dog just getting his leash pulled back every time he decided to try to bite, it just wasn't there. And, you know, Atlas tried to do a speech, and it's just exactly what it was, a speech with a lot of words, but nothing there to guide his fighter out of the fiery trenches that Manny Pacquiao produced against him on Saturday night. I thought it was the best performance out of the three fights between those guys. This by far was the best performance out of Manny Pacquiao. And it might not have been because Manny Pacquiao is that much more rejuvenated or that much hungry. I think it had a lot to do with Timothy Bradley. I could be wrong, but I definitely want to hear your guys' opinion. I want to hear what your guys' take about it. Gabriel, let's hear what you had to say about that fight, brother.
Well, I agree with you on Teddy, and we both had talked about this. That it wasn't gonna, Teddy wasn't gonna amount to anything in this fight. That this was all, you know, how many times do you watch boxing media get excited about a new angle? You know, particularly in a rematch situation or a rubber match situation, where new angles are at a premium. And Teddy is so great to, you know, to quote, and you could see everybody just lapping it up, and him just really loving the cameras and loving this spotlight. I'm a trainer again. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. But, you know, he's had some success as a trainer, but he's also had a lot of years as not being a trainer, you know, and just being a TV guy. And I always say, like, you know, when, like, you show me a Virgil Hunter, and I'm like, where's his other fighters? That, to me, is kind of the mark of somebody. I mean, people can dog Freddie Roach all they want, but his stable at his peak was full of really good fighters, and they were winning. And it's not easy to do that. Manage personalities, manage their schedules, and get it all done, and then win. And he did that for many years. And people dog him out. And you look at Teddy, and you're like, well, are you really a trainer? Because what really defines a good general is how they deal with adversity, not how well they game plan. That's part of it. But when their game plan came out, and like you said last week, Dave, after 3-4 rounds, you could see Manny getting more and more comfortable. We were going to see everything that Tim Bradley brought in those 3 or 4 rounds, and Manny saw that. And by the third, fourth round, and then fifth round, all of a sudden he was just exploding. And the fifth round, he was knocking Tim around and landing the same punch. You know, they didn't solve the left hand. Manny seemed to solve the right hand to Tim. It seemed to kind of go away, in fact. I think, you know, maybe Teddy was too obsessed with having him box the right way and straight punches, and let me fix all the things that, you know, Joel Diaz, the trainer, did, even though they won multiple championships at multiple weights. You know, only Teddy knows. Very arrogant. And you look at it, they didn't even want to, after 2 knockdowns, you know, stick to boxing. It's all about me and my brilliance. What about just throwing the game plan out the window and going for it? Because that actually had more success for Bradley in the first 2 fights than it did in this fight. This game, thoroughly unimpressed by Teddy Atlas and very impressed by Manny Pacquiao.
You know, a lot of metaphors too, which is go out the side door or come around. You know, get around him. But there was really no direction of, okay, how do I get around him? You know, like, when do you want me to get around him? Get around him, in other words, circle him the way Floyd Mayweather circled him and not engage, or get around him when he throws a punch and try to catch him in a different angle. I'll tell you the one punch that I thought that they were trying to land, I think the one that they worked on with Teddy Atlas, was the left hook. You know, waiting for Manny to come in, be a little over anxious, try to land something big and catch him coming in with the left hook. Because I saw the left hook being thrown a lot. I think the right hand was eliminated because the fact that it was Pacquiao who decided to always lead first, you know. I don't know. There were some things there that I was just scratching my head about and going, okay. Obviously, the stay in the pocket, keep your ground, and try to land big shots was in the game plan. Try to get that left hook in there, and none of it worked, and there was never any adjustment. So Felipe, let me hear your opinion about it.
Yeah, I thought it was a great performance of Manny Pacquiao. I mean, from what we had seen in the past, I mean, the win against Chris Algieri, I mean, it was Chris Algieri. The win against Brandon Rios, it was Brandon Rios. And then the complete debacle against Floyd Mayweather, and being 37 years old, I expected that Manny Pacquiao was really not the same Manny Pacquiao, but he proved me and a lot of people wrong this past Saturday night. I was expecting. I was talking to you about this earlier, David, where it was a it was a pleasant surprise that for the first time in a long time we got a fight that surprised us the other way. We usually, you know, we thought that Scott Quigg against Carl Frampton was going to be a good fight. It wasn't. We thought Tyson Fury against Vladimir Klitschko was going to be a good fight. It wasn't. And nobody really expected this to be a great fight because, honestly, I didn't believe the first or the second ones were. But it turned out to be a great fight and the best performance from either man, I think, in the trilogy. Because even though Timothy Bradley lost, you know, to a certain extent, like always, he tried as best as he could. Maybe it wasn't coming from the corner. Maybe it was him in the second half looking completely dejected every time he went back to the corner and without any answers. But that was just because it was Manny Pacquiao in front of him. You know, Manny Pacquiao, you know, I was really impressed that, you know, he dropped Chris Algieri multiple times. He beat the crap out of Brandon Rios. But for him to do this to a Timothy Bradley, who I consider one of the top 10 fighters in the boxing world right now, that was really impressive.
Okay, really quick from Twitter, Big Rich at Bob and Weave 78. He put out there about, after Pac and Bradley, I could have sworn it looked like Bradley told Roach, "I will call you tomorrow." Because the what I've heard through the circuit and what I've read is that there's a strong possibility there is probably no more Atlas relationship with Timothy Bradley. I said this last week. When do we hear, you know, he was not there enough? Now, Bradley said, hey, the thing about Teddy Atlas is he doesn't like to travel. You know, it's away from his family. I think he needs to swallow his pride and go back to Joel Diaz. I just don't see the chemistry with him with any other trainer at the moment. Why change it up? I hate to see guys that had good chemistry. Yes, you have a couple of losses, but that's part of boxing, you know. And like you said, Felipe, it was a great performance in terms that after him getting dropped, after him seeing that this wasn't working, he reverted to who he always reverted to as Bradley, the desert storm. He tried to make a storm out of something because he was in the desert. He was drowned out by Manny Pacquiao. You know, it leaves, you know, to me, it leaves no bad taste because the guy still comes to fight. That guy still has a lot of dog in him. You know, he didn't fold after that first knockdown or after the third and fourth round. You could pretty much see the disappointment. Now, the one thing that Timothy Bradley doesn't have, guys, is the Marco Antonio poker face. He tells you everything he's thinking and every disappointment he's having at the moment. That's one thing that you can't teach a fighter. You can yell at the fighter and get him back in the gear. And honestly, Teddy tried to do that, but it just didn't come across. Because I don't know about you guys, but in between those rounds, when Teddy Atlas was trying to get Bradley's attention, it almost seemed to me, Gabriel, like he was just looking out to the crowd and just trying to, like, it was like he was doing math in his head, like, I don't get it. I was throwing more punches in the first and second. What's going on in the third? Why am I not throwing more punches? Why is he hitting me more? Why is he able to connect me a lot quicker? What's going on here, Gabriel? I mean, I was sitting there going, like, what is he doing? Why is he not listening or even trying to pay attention to figure out what is going on in between those rounds?
Well, I think, you know, and I think it's interesting that we've heard that now, that phrase that, you know, Teddy doesn't like to travel and it's tough. It's funny. I find that hypocritical. Teddy's always talking about what fighters should be doing and you got to make the sacrifice and the silent agreement and all these colorful catchphrases that have made him to the personality that everybody loves. He doesn't like to travel that much as a trainer. Isn't the trainer the one that sets the example? I just find that very, very interesting. And you know, again, it's we can get into the legacy stuff later because I think Teddy's very much a part of the damage that was done to Manny Pacquiao's legacy, along with Tim Smith, Ben Thompson, Paulie Malignaggi, who continues it, to denigrate Manny Pacquiao. He's the only guy that you can't point to and say, you know, maybe it was the matchmaking. Maybe he's just that good. Instead, they vilified him with no proof, no positive drug tests, nobody disclosing, you know, somebody in his camp that maybe was giving him drugs. None of that. All those guys went on record basically saying Manny Pacquiao was a drug user or intimated that he was, as Teddy Atlas did, saying he got emails that are supposedly damning. He never published them, never followed up on it, neither did Tim Smith. They just went with a story when they didn't have the whole picture. And it led to everything else. I mean, I think Floyd Mayweather has a lot of culpability in that. He paid millions because that's true in the defamation suit with Manning. But all that stuff really bothers me. But, you know, getting back to the fight, I just think, yeah, look at it. I mean, Teddy's yelling at him. And, you know, it's really great to be like, hey, put out the fire. Go finish that guy and get all riled up in a fight that you're winning by shutout against an overmatched foe like Brandon Rios. It's a whole other thing. And let's not forget, I mean, what did Brandon ever do above 135 pounds that was of note? You know, he's got some well-matched fights, but he's never was a monster. So beating him up at 47 is not really an accomplishment. It's just you did it. And it's, you know, he's a guy way out of his weight class. So there's a big difference between that and facing a puzzle in Manny Pacquiao. And then, you know, and coming up with some good advice. I mean, what's with all the metaphors? You really got to remember all that shit in the middle of a fight? Whatever happened to, you know, throw the right and come back with the left? It was all theatrics. And I really, you could tell in the commentary from HBO that even they had bought that bullshit because they're sitting there watching Teddy's stuff. And I call it bullshit because, you know, I've seen people denigrate Nazim Richardson for the same thing, swimming out getting wet. But when Teddy does it, for some reason, it's okay. Even though it's all a bunch of BS, it hasn't really amounted to anything. And, you know, as of late. And even, you know, with Michael Moore, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, they won titles and everything, but that was insufferable to watch. So in this fight, you know, Tim's going out there going, go into the side and what, whoop-de-whoop-de-wham. And, like, why not just give him good advice? You know, why not make an adjustment? I mean, he's sitting there denigrating Roach and, you know, they've got this rivalry, and he denigrated him enough to say that his fighter's on drugs and that everybody's in collusion with it because, I mean, and I can get into that point if you want, but it just, you know, the whole thing just didn't wash with me. And I felt like Teddy got exposed a little bit, doesn't know how to adjust, didn't really know how to motivate his fighter. If his fighter's not down, he can't change. So how could his fighter?
That's a good point there. I wonder right now, Felipe, where does Timothy go if he doesn't continue this relationship with Teddy Atlas? And because the fact that two fights in, does he wave his hands up in the air and say, forget it? I mean, he can't travel. Where does he go from here? Does he go back and try to reconcile this relationship with Joel Diaz, or does he find another guy? And if he does find the other guy, who's the other guy that could possibly help him out in maintaining who he is, or adding to what he's not at the moment?
I think there's a lot of possibilities there. With Joel Diaz, I think the relationship can be repaired. Like I mentioned to you earlier, we had a phone conversation earlier, David. Joel Diaz was on the Spanish language podcast that I am associated with on Fridays, and he gave an interview where he's not really too happy with Bradley's team, but he has a lot of respect for Timothy Bradley. I think that if Timothy Bradley came to him and spoke to him man to man and admitted that he made a mistake and that there is going to be some changes to the team, as far not so much to the team, but the way that the team is involved in his career as far as the training side of it, I think,
right,
honestly, Joel Diaz is a good enough man that he will accept them back, because I think Joel Diaz can recognize what they have done together and how much more they can do together. But I think that Timothy Bradley would have to humble himself and admit his mistake of leaving him and demand those changes in his team, or at least as far as the team getting involved in his training. If that doesn't happen, I wouldn't be too surprised to see him with a Virgil Hunter or that kind of trainer. I mean, he's always going to look for a high-profile trainer. I think he needs a high-profile trainer, a guy that can motivate him to a certain extent. Maybe it'll be Freddie Roach now that Manny Pacquiao is, quote-unquote, retired, and I don't see Freddie Roach, you know, not accepting him, because Timothy Bradley is a good fighter, and I believe that he's somewhat teachable to a certain extent. But I would really like to see him again with Joel Diaz. I mean, he had some success there. The only loss that came to him was against Manny Pacquiao under Joel Diaz. And the times that Timothy Bradley had gone in trouble in fights like against Ruslan Provodnikov or Jesse Vargas was when it was clearly he was not following the game plan that he had worked on,
right,
and Joel
yeah.
Diaz were reminding him of that, you know? So it wasn't
yep.
Joel Diaz not And the whole deal will try to steer him back into that game plan. So I think whole deal is the right guy, but I think Timothy Bradley has to be the right kind of man to go back there and ask for forgiveness.
Hmm. I think so as well, man. I think so as well. And I wouldn't surprise, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he was to go, hey, Freddie, what's up? But at the same time, I just don't see Freddie Roach going to the desert to train him. I mean, that's something Timothy Bradley's going to have to – he's going to have to swallow his pride and say, yeah, he's going to have to go down to the wild card and be – and he would have to accept. Because here's the one thing that supposedly Tim Bradley had a problem with Joel Diaz, guys, is that he said that he didn't have complete focus on him. Which Joel Diaz said that's not even true. That's absolutely false. But
that's the thing. That's the thing is that if you're going to search for a high-profile trainer like a Freddie Roach or a Virgil Hunter or a Joel Diaz or a Robert Garcia or a John David Jackson or anybody like – or even an Abel Sanchez, you're not going to be the only rooster in the hen house. You know, there's going to be other guys there that are – they're as high profile as you are. And going back to what Gabriel said, you know, you get a Teddy Atlas. Teddy Atlas is rusty, just like a boxer is rusty when he hasn't been in the gym or in the ring for some time. A trainer gets rusty too, and that is maybe something that happened to Teddy Atlas, and he had not gotten back into that trainer form. But Timothy Bradley was happy because he was the only guy there. But when you go after these high profile trainers, you're not going to be the only guy there.
Yeah, I mean, I said this last week. That not only to me, it was really to find out where is Teddy Atlas at as a trainer, and we found out. You know, I mean, you know, that is he more commentator now than he is a trainer? Well, we found out. Really quick, 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Myself, Dave Duenas, my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and Felipe Leon. Let's pass in the phone lines really quick. Let's hear what some folks got to say. Let's go area code 812. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Joe from Indiana. Hey, man.
Joe from Indiana. What's up, brother?
Yeah, how you guys? Yeah, man, I still think Bradley should, you know, stick around with Teddy a little bit, man. I mean, it was just one fight. And I would like to see him maybe get a Vargas rematch, but take some time off and get a Vargas rematch maybe in the fall or close to the wintertime. And maybe they can – because I would hate for him to keep switching trainers, man. I still think they have room for improvement. But I know – I think when you guys said that this was to see where Teddy was at as a trainer, but as a world-class fighter too, you got to step – it's the biggest fight of your life. I mean, yeah, Teddy's telling you these things, but you got to go out and go for it too, man. I put a lot of that on Bradley too. It looked like just –
You didn't think Bradley went for it? You didn't think Bradley went for it?
He did. I think it was the fifth round he did a little bit, but it just looked like – I mean, I don't know. I think he could have did more. It just looked like towards the end of the fight, everyone – like somebody said earlier, when he was coming back to the – to the corner, his confidence was gone. I've never seen that in Bradley before. And, you know, Teddy was even telling him, man. But I still think, I mean, Brad, hell of a performance by Pacquiao, but I don't want to see this marriage break up yet between Teddy and Bradley. I think it could be special. It's just going to need some, you know, maybe a couple tune-up fights, but I would like to see him and Vargas get it on in a rematch, but with Teddy on his side. I don't know, going back to Diaz is going to be the right move right now, man. I got a question for Felipe, because I know he follows the Mexican scene real good. Felipe, out of the three Mexican fighters that were on the undercard, which one do you think is going to be, like, the most – like, be able to sell out arenas or be a big star as far as, like, the crossover in America?
Huh, that's a good question. I would have to say Oscar Valdez. You know, he has the pedigree, two-time Mexican Olympian. He speaks fluently English and Spanish. He's at a weight class that makes sense. You know, he's a featherweight. Obviously, he could go up to super featherweight and maybe even 135 pounds. As far as Gilberto Ramirez, you know, I think that he has a very interesting style, very commercial style. But just the fact that, you know, unless he learns how to speak English and or once he starts gaining up in weight, you know, to 175, to, or even, I mean, I think he could only go up one weight class, 175. I think he's too small to hit cruiserweight or something like that. So, and at 168, you don't have all these, like, popular fighters. I mean, once he gets through, you know,
that's what I was saying.
You know, if Gennady Golovkin comes up, or and then he beats Badu Jack, if they ever do the Chavez Jr. fight, which I think will happen if Chavez can get down to that weight. But as far as longevity and as far as being, you know, a star, I don't know about selling arenas, maybe selling out the StubHub. I just think Oscar Valdez, his style, it's a good style, but. And even though he beat Gradovich, I still want to see a little bit more from him to say that he does have star quality.
You know, the only thing about Oscar Valdez is do my thing with him is that do you really look at him as a Mexican fighter or a Mexican American fighter?
No, he's a Mexican fighter. He's a Mexican fighter. He's being promoted in Mexico. He was born in Mexico.
Okay.
He lived in Mexico. He's a Mexican fighter. It's just that, you know, he's with Top Rank, he's with Frank Espinosa, and they've been promoting him in Mexico fairly well, you know, putting him on the Mexican channels and stuff like that. And I think that once he gets a world title, they're going to push that a little bit more. And I think that world
more,
title
huh?
is going to
yeah.
come. It's going to come soon. I think that Vasyl Lomachenko is going to vacate the WBO title when he faces Rocky Martinez for a 130-pound title, and that's when they're going to give Oscar Valdez the opportunity for that WBO title because he's ranked number one, so they just got to get one of the available 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, whoever's available, and they're going to match him up, and they're going to give him that title.
Okay, really quick, between both of the guys, Manny Pacquiao's performance, obviously, you could definitely see there's still – something there with Manny. With Timothy Bradley, even though he did lose, I thought he put up a good fight. I thought he was trying his best. He just couldn't figure it out. Like I said before, I think no matter what he comes, he's just not going to have the capabilities of beating Manny Pacquiao. Where do both of these guys go? Who do they face next? Gabriel Montoya? What does Manny do? Does he really fall into the retirement? Should he move on? And if he does, who does he fight? Bradley, he got to redeem himself, got to get the fans back. Obviously, people are going to write him off because of this performance. That's just the way it goes in boxing. Who does he follow up with and try to get him in the ring with?
Well, I think Manny, you know, he initially has got his political career to deal with. So I think we're gonna just have to wait and see when that election happens. We don't know how that goes, and I think everything for Manny comes off of that. If he wins, and say Floyd doesn't want a rematch, or you know, there's not a giant lucrative fight there, another $20 million, another real reason for him to step forward. I mean, why should he face and then we're finding out that Terrence Crawford is going to fight Victor Postol. So that's occupied. So like the chess pieces have to move a bit in order for Manny to really want to be back in. So I think where he goes is into his election process. Hopefully for him, he wins that, and we go from there. We probably move on. On the Bradley side, I think he's got a lot of questions to answer. Who does he want to have train him? How does he want to proceed in that regard? Is Teddy that guy? And then, what does he have left? I mean, how much money has he made? Does he want to keep fighting? Does he feel like if he can't win at the Pacquiao level, then he doesn't want to fight? Or is he all good with pursuing other bouts? I think there's a lot of questions from him. I don't know if people, I've heard the Vargas wants the rematch, but do you guys want to see that fight again?
Well, when me and Felipe were talking about this earlier today, I mean, HBO obviously can't afford it being on HBO. It would have to go to pay-per-view. So how do you sell that? I got to tell you this, because of both guys' performances, okay, because of what Jesse Vargas did with Ali, and even though, like I said, Bradley was on that losing end with Pacquiao, it's against Pacquiao. So do I want to see the rematch? Why not? Why wouldn't I want to see that rematch? Or the only other fight I would like to see him go up against is, what is Terrence Crawford going to do next? What are the plans for him? I don't know. Felipe, what do you think?
I agree with Gabriel. If Manny Pacquiao wins his political campaign, then he's going to stay retired. He's going to follow that path. If he doesn't, I see him facing, and if he does come back, if he decides to come back in the fall, or, in April of next year, I do see him facing Terrence Crawford, even in the fall of this year, because Terrence Crawford is going to fight in July, I think it's July, against Victor Postol. So if he wins that fight, he gets a little bit higher profile, and then he could face Manny Pacquiao in a fight on pay-per-view. Obviously, Manny Pacquiao carrying the pay-per-view. And like I mentioned to you earlier today, David, and I want to get Gabriel's opinion of this, if Terrence Crawford beats Victor Postol, which is not a given, because Victor Postol is a good fighter and Terrence Crawford has a fight in his hands that night, does Terrence Crawford have the same profile as far as the boxing world that Timothy Bradley had when he first faced Manny Pacquiao?
Good question.
You mean, is he at the same level of popularity? No, I think on some level, well, I think we all respected Tim, but we all knew that the excitement ceiling was low because he's not a knockout puncher. He may be a game, but he's not going to catch you with that shot unless it's to the body. And even that's kind of rare with him.
I think Felipe was asking you, Gabriel. I think this is what Felipe was asking you. In terms of resume of who had Bradley had faced before stepping in with Manny Pacquiao, Terrence Crawford is almost in that category.
No, not so much resume, but as far as the profile, like of how many people know him, how many times he's fought on HBO, what his footprint is in the boxing world. If Terrence Crawford is to beat Victor Postol in July, would he have the same footprint in the boxing world as what Timothy Bradley had when he first faced Manny Pacquiao?
That's a great question because, I mean, you know, he's done well at home, right? We know that
right.
Tim can draw it, or that Crawford can draw at home, whereas Tim
– He could have drawn
like
at home.
Great free agent. He was a free agent signing, but he couldn't spell out at home. Yeah. I mean,
right.
I saw him and I walked out yet there. There was nobody there at that tiny, you know, casino. He was kind of underpromoted for being a very, you know, I think he's much more accomplished than Crawford at this point.
Yes.
And at the point
I agree with you,
when it's upbringing, you know, but that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, he Crawford does sell well. So there is that footprint. Do they travel? I'm not quite sure. I think they would travel for a Pacquiao fight. Everybody loves it when your team gets in the big game. So I imagine his people would travel, but that remains to be seen. That's just a guess. That's a great question. I'm not quite sure.
So that is, I think that's the answer. That's the question right there. If Manny Pacquiao would come back, and it would be, obviously, if he doesn't get I don't want to see him against Canelo under no circumstance. And obviously, if he doesn't get the Floyd Mayweather fight. And as far as Timothy Bradley, I agree. I mean, Jesse Vargas is the guy. Jesse Vargas is asking for the fight, so he's a willing player. He's with Top Rank, so there's no issues there. And the guy has a title, and Timothy Bradley has beaten him in the past. So why wouldn't Bradley fight him? Obviously, it would be on pay-per-view, and if it sells 100, 150, 200,000 pay-per-views, I think it's good enough.
I say, if the Jesse Vargas fight doesn't happen, the rematch doesn't happen, I got to tell you this. I would love to see Bradley and Crawford. That's the fight that I want to see. You know, I want to see where exactly is Crawford and where exactly is Bradley at, you know? And I think that what goes into play with Bradley, the storyline of what trainer does he have next? Is there anything left? Is it a classic boxer going to be able to dominate a Bradley that can be reckless? A guy that had power at 140, could he take out a guy that's shown that he has vulnerability of being dropped? To me, it all writes up a really good story. If you want to talk about passing the torch, this is a great way of passing that torch. But at the same time, this is also a way of finding out, what does Bradley have left? Is he still the guy that we think he once was, or was it a facade of what we saw with Teddy Atlas and Brandon Rios? I want to see either one of them, Jesse Vargas or
I think,
like I said, Terrence Crawford.
Mm-hmm. I think that we can't judge what Timothy Bradley has left with this fight because he lost to Manny Pacquiao. I mean, Manny Pacquiao
exactly. Is
another
exactly.
type of monster, you know. Manny Pacquiao is another type of monster. So, yeah, if he goes and fights Jesse Vargas and loses to Jesse Vargas, you know, then we could talk about, you know, what's left for Timothy Bradley, because Timothy Bradley at this point is a veteran of the sport. He's been fighting for a long, long time. So it's getting to that point where, you know, they start retiring. you know, he's not a Bernard Hopkins, even though he's taking care of himself really, really well. So he might be able to go another 3, 4, 5 years as far as, you know, what we can guess.
Yeah, Joshua, Anthony Joshua and Charles Martin, I said it last week. We're going to find out whether Martin was there to really be a heavyweight, an American heavyweight, or if he was there to get a paycheck. And I hate to say it, I thought he was there to get a paycheck. After the second round, it gets dropped twice. The first time he got dropped, I think me and you, Felipe, or some, I think it was you or Gabe, I talked to you guys about, and I said, and you guys pointed out, he looked really hurt the first time he was dropped. The second time, I'm not quite sure if he was that hurt. He had a smile on his face. Anthony Joshua looked at him, smiled right back at him, and it was almost like, you know, I'm going to make it just controversial enough and get up by 9 and make it seem like I was trying to get up. But at the end of the day, even if the guy did get up, I didn't see it going any further except for a third knockdown and it being completely waved off. I don't know what you guys are thinking. I'll go with you real quick, Gable. What was your take about it? Another Mike Tyson and Peter McNeely, or am I way off here?
No, I thought he was pretty hurt when he got bopped, you know. I don't know what the whole getting up at 9 thing was. You know, sometimes guys just save face. Maybe they think they're being smart. But, I mean, you're being stupid if you go on foreign soil and it's a preordained situation. Everybody's assuming you're going to lose. Everybody's hoping you lose in the building. You're going to try to get tricky and wait one more second like you're going to be better? It made no sense to me. But, you know, maybe he just wasn't thinking straight because he just got rocked by 2 giant right hands. Great right hands, on the move, no less. Joshua's got a hell of a ceiling on it, man. This kid could be dangerous for many, many years.
I think he just fits all the part. I mean, if you look at – if you want to create a heavyweight and you want to build him and make him look like a heavyweight, I think he has everything. You know, the physique, the charisma, the style. He's got it all. Mm. But it's really hard for me to register how well is he. I mean, it was against Charles Martin. I thought that, you know, Charles Martin, if he tried to use his jab and try not to pull his head back, and which he did. He did everything wrong in that fight, and he just looked so uncomfortable. In that first round, here comes Joshua Anthony. He just looked like he was at home. This was another ball game for him to get through, and he was throwing all the pitches, and guess what? He wasn't striking out. Felipe, I mean, Charles Martin, do we see this guy ever again? Is this the last of him? And if so, what do we see him go back to? I mean, where does he go from here?
I think, being that he's with Al Heyman, well, no, he's not with, is he with Al Heyman? I know he's with King Sports Boxing, the guy.
He's with Al Heyman.
He's with Al Heyman. Yeah, so being that he's with Al Heyman, you know, we're going to see him as cannon fodder for other guys. The guy has no skill, honestly. I mean, I don't even know how he got to this point. And Anthony Joshua exposed that. I mean, I agree with you. He looked completely uncomfortable. His hands were down. He never saw that punch come in. And he looked like he had never been hit that hard with that first knockdown and then the second knockdown. He obviously was not ready for that level. And Anthony Joshua, 16-0, 16 knockouts, pretty impressive. He has some wins under his belt, but I think that the smart thing for him and for his people is to take them slow, you know. He's not ready for the big dogs in the division with only 16 fights. You know, and I think that they can, you know, make their money. I mean, the place sold out in 90 seconds when the tickets went on sale some weeks ago. So obviously he's one of the most popular fighters in England, and that's saying something because every time they have a huge boxing event out there, it sells out fairly, fairly quickly. But I don't think they sell out as quickly as they do for Anthony Joshua recently. So I think they're going to have to take him so slow. I think that the Tyson Fury fight is going to happen, hopefully, not this year, but maybe next year if Tyson Fury keeps those belts. But we'll see. I mean, Derek Chisora is a good matchup. I think David Hay is a good matchup just because of the size advantage that Anthony Joshua is going to have over him. And the other question is, what were you saying about his calves earlier today, David? You sounded pretty enamored by his calves.
I was looking, dude. I mean, I tell you this, you know, when you see a heavyweight, a lot of them are either they're very heavy topped, and then they have very thin legs. If you go back and you look at like Mike Tyson, the shorter stature heavyweights, their legs are big, they're thick. Dude, Anthony Joshua's legs are massive. He's got like.
It sounded
he's got,
like you almost, wanted him to. It sounded like you wanted him to wrap those legs around you somewhat.
Easy. But let me ask you this. Let me ask you this really quick, okay? Who's got the better resume right now? American Dante Wilder or the Brit Anthony Joshua? Gabriel Montoya, who's got the better resume at this moment?
I think I probably Wilder because we don't think much of Martin. Dillian White was like a fellow prospect. They had an experience, you know, they had prior fight experience together. And he went through some adversity, and he won that fight. But that's one bit of rounds that he's had and hasn't really been pushed. Whereas Wilder's had some fights, you know, where he's had to win and then win late. You know, he'd be winning every round, but he'd be being pushed. And so I think they're pretty close to each other. But if I had to put stock in one guy or buy stock in one guy, I said this long ago when they first turned pro, I would take Anthony Joshua all day. Buy big, hold on to it. It's going to be worth a lot.
You know, somewhere in the world right now, you have Michael Grant sitting back going, when I was going to become a heavyweight champion of the world, why wasn't there another Michael Grant like me so that I can just learn on the job the way these heavyweights right now are learning on the job? I mean, Felipe, when's the last time have we seen two heavyweights at the moment right now that hold a title and really hasn't answered a whole lot of questions? There are hopes. These guys are too hopefuls of being the heavyweight champion of the world. But there's not a definite statement that says they're gonna reign for some time. They're not a Lennox Lewis. They're not a Holyfield. These guys don't follow the norm of traditional of how we've seen heavyweights get to that reign. They don't, you know. To me, these are two Michael Grants, in my opinion. We don't really know, but we're hoping that they're going to hold up to that stature.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to the history, not the history, but the way that the heavyweight division has gone in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, obviously the Klitschkos have reigned over this division for a long, long time. And finally, now that they're almost out of the picture, then we start getting these kind of heavyweight champs, which we've gotten in other divisions, you know. In other divisions, some guy as a fluke. I mean, Chris Algieri was a world champion, wasn't he? You know, they get these titles and then they lose them in the first defense or anything like that. And that's what we're going to start seeing in the heavyweight division. And then hopefully soon we start settling down with, you know, the guys that are going to hold the belts and bring us exciting fights for quite some time, like it was Mike Tyson and it was Evander Holyfield and these guys. I don't think Tyson Fury is that guy right now. I think Tyson Fury can be beat. He probably can be beat in the next fight against Vladimir Klitschko in the rematch. And I don't know about Anthony Joshua. To me, I mean, Gabriel's pretty high on him. I still need to be convinced.
Well,
and
here's
as far
the
as
thing.
The resume...
Right.
As far as the resume, I think Wilder has a better resume just for the fact that he beat, even though he was a shop-worn and older fighter, the White Wolf, Ljakovic. I forgot his first name. I don't know if he's a Sergey or he's a Ciari. Sergey Ljakovic. Yeah, when he knocked him out like in the first or second round, I was kind of impressed with that just because of his power. And for him to go 12 rounds with Bermain Cervin, even though Bermain Cervin wasn't at his best at that time, that also proved to me that Deontay Wilder, maybe not the best in the division, but able to do some things.
You know, there's been so much in terms of when people think of Vladimir Klitschko, they believe he had a hold of this division, not because he wasn't fighting guys that were stepping up like the likes of Floyd Mayweather, but he was so dominant. Do you think that's why we're so receptive right now, Gabriel? Because we have two guys right now, they're not proven champions. They're title holders, but not real proven champions. So you don't see a lot of harp about it. You don't see a lot of people complaining that we're seeing two guys that have been more in the light of a prospect rather really than a guys that have been deserved to be called champions at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been dying for, you know, an American heavyweight for a while. Somebody to be exciting in the division. And, you know, I mean, it gets to a point where you're like, all right, enough of these guys. I want a real guy to root for, not a jab-and-grab style or somebody that just figured out how to win just enough to win. You know, that's not exciting. We want risk. I think that's what we like Joshua is that, and Wilder, is that they're aggressive. They want to mix it up. And that's a rare thing anymore in any division. So it's exciting when there are two gigantic guys that want to get that done, you know, want to come out hard after you. So I think that's part of it. And I think it's just always, you know, we're always looking for the new. We're always looking for the next in boxing, you know, whether it's a bad storyline or a new fighter.
I agree with Gabriel. You know, the Klitschkos weren't all that exciting, but they were dominant. But the thing about Klitschko that we can't take away, Vladimir Klitschko, and even Vitaly, but more Vladimir because he kind of stayed around a little bit longer, is that guy never really ducked anybody. I mean, he fought every mandatory challenger.
Right.
He fought every guy that would call him out. I mean, I remember Samuel Peter, remember that Nigerian nightmare? I mean, that guy was like a mini. Everybody would say, oh, this guy's great, this guy's this guy's that. And Klitschko, even though he battled it out, he got dropped and everything, he beat him, you know? And that was like one of his biggest threats at that time or even in his whole career. I mean, he did get knocked out by, you know, some nobodies like, I think he passed away, may he rest in peace, Corey Sanders from Australia. But other than that, Klitschko, I mean, Vladimir Klitschko, I mean, he never ducked anybody. Just the fact that, I mean, his style, although effective, I agree with Gabriel, not that exciting.
Okay, so now we got the win for Anthony Joshua. Now the big question is, where does he go from here? Okay, obviously Al Heyman's got a piece of Anthony Joshua. Does he sit on the title? If he doesn't, where does he go there? I know some folks are wanting to see Tyson Fury. I don't see that happening right now. I think Tyson Fury's a genius, though, by marketing himself with the name of Joshua Anthony by bringing it up. But I think that is the plan B. If the plan A that doesn't go through with the rematch with Vladimir Klitschko doesn't go through. We talked a little bit about this, Felipe, and we threw out some of the PBC names for Joshua to face and stuff. And I think one of the names that was interesting is because there's been a certain type of love, a certain type of coddle for Chris Anaimer Ariella from Al Heyman. Do you think that's a strong possibility that we see that fight happening? Because Chris has always been receptive of saying, hey, I'll fight anybody. And he probably would be the only one that would want to go to the UK to step in the ring with a big, young world champion like that at the moment. Gabriel, what do you think? Who would be the name? Do you think that would be a strong possibility to see Chris Nightmare go over there, make the run, possibly not get the win because I think he's already done. I think the train has left the station in terms of Chris ever becoming a world titleist.
I think so.
Do you think Chris goes over there to fight Joshua?
Go ahead,
or do you think they keep him, or do you think they save him for Wilder?
No. I think they serve him up to Anthony Joshua.
To who? Wait. Sir,
Chris Arreola. Chris Arreola. I think Chris Arreola.
Yeah.
They would give him Anthony Joshua because, again, Deontay Wilder, who knows what's going to happen in the end of May. I mean, he's facing a tough fighter in hostile territory. He may not come out unscathed from that fight.
Agreed. That's a tough fight.
Tough fight.
And I just wonder,
big
I don't know, you know, I don't know if there's actually, did Al Heyman have options on Joshua? I mean, is that a real thing?
Thomas Hauser reported in the fifth installment of that Al Heyman piece he did for Ring TV.
He alluded to it. He did.
Yeah, he alluded to it. So I think, what other reason would he serve up Charles Martin, who just won the title, to Anthony Joshua? What I read in that Thomas Hauser piece is that he had offered Charles Martin to Alexander Povetkin instead of Deontay Wilder. Povetkin said, no, I want the WBC title. So then he went with Anthony Joshua if they gave him options on him, which I'm sure they did.
Smart
move.
There you go.
Smart move, man.
I see him maybe facing a Chris Arreola. I mean, even though you know, I agree with David that, you know, he's a little bit past his prime. He's probably never going to win a world title, but he's the perfect guy for this. I mean, he has an extensive record,
right?
A pretty good record. The guy knows how to sell a fight. I mean, imagine the trash talking that's going to go on between these two guys. And I'm sure that he's willing to travel to England to face him. There's no way that Anthony Joshua at this point is going to come to the United States and not for Chris Arreola. When he can make so much money over there. So, and he's an Al Haymon fighter, and he's going to get a great payday. I mean, if he gets nearly as much as Charles Martin did, why wouldn't, which would be probably the biggest payday of Chris Arreola's career, why wouldn't he go over there?
And it's a guaranteed KO, you know? I mean, Chris's game. It's not like Chris is going to try to outbox, you know, Anthony. He's going to try to go in there and be Chris, but this is a shell of Chris, and I don't see why not. I don't see that not happening at all. I don't see what other move they would make and stuff, but we'd have to wait and see. We'd have to definitely wait and see what is the next play by Eddie Hearns and Anthony Joshua and Mr. Al Haymon himself. Let's end it on the note of the fights for this weekend real quick, guys. Gable, you want to refresh our memory? Who's fighting this weekend? What do we got? I know we have Spencer in Algeria, right?
Give me a second. I will pull up the fight schedule. Just give me one moment.
Fight fans, don't forget that every Monday you got the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Every Tuesday, Felipe Leon on In the Square Circle. Every Wednesday, Leaving the Ring with myself and the two guys that are here right with me that I just mentioned a little while ago. Every other week you got the 2 minute round, and we're still working on Lenny the Fight Smith show, which is because Lenny's is not, it's not like a scheduled show. Like, I keep getting a lot of emails going, hey, I thought it was supposed to. No, it's not a scheduled show. It's when he wants a guest, and because he's trying to he wants to have some of the best guests on his show, and because it's more of a one-on-one show. It's not really a show of breaking news or et cetera or topics like the way we do it. It's just a one-on-one
David,
show. But
the next 2 minute round show will be on April 21st. Unfortunately, we weren't able to have it this past April 7th because of some technical difficulties. But the next show, April 21st, we're going to have it from L.A. I'll be there live to cover the Golovkin versus Wade fight card happening on April 23rd. But more importantly, for the two-minute round, the all-female boxing show, we should have interviews with not only Amarich Quintana, who is from San Diego, California, who's going to be fighting in an A-rounder against in that fight card, but also her opponent, Kenny Enriquez of Tijuana. We should be having her on that show on April 21st, a two-minute round, 6 p.m. Pacific time here on the Leave It in the Ring Network with myself, Felipe Leon, and my co-host, David Avila and Liz Quevedo Parr. It's Liz Quevedo Parr, David, not Quezada,
Liz,
like you said last time.
Dominic Wade. Hey, I watched some tape. I watched a lot of tape of Dominic Wade, actually. I wanted to see, was a little curious about who this kid was. I know I saw him in the past fight Sam Solomon on Showtime, but now he's stepping up and he's going against the guy that's mostly considered as the I guess you would have to say, the Tyson of the middleweight division, Gennady Golovkin. I got to tell you this, even though I want to see what Gennady's all about, I'm still not on that gravy train with him. Guys, with Dominic, I hate to say this, but watching him, he doesn't have a prayer in this fight, okay? He's 5'10 and a half, doesn't have a jab, doesn't work the ring very well. Sam Solomon kind of showed me that you can get in close, and Sam Solomon's not a very tall guy, neither is Gennady, but he showed that he can get in the pocket, he could smother him, and Dominic doesn't know what to really do there. You know, now, he won the fight against Sam Solomon, but this is not a guy that knows how to throw punches. This is not a guy that knows how to use his jab. This is not a guy that doesn't know how to throw the overhand, that knows how to throw the overhand right hand over the top of your guard. Everything that I looked at.
What does he know how to do? What does he know how to do, and how did he get to this position, David? You know, well, how did he get here?
Okay.
He's number one for the IBF.
He's got to fight tall. I mean, Felipe, he's got to fight tall. He's got to somehow produce a Oscar De La Hoya jab, a Vladimir Klitschko jab. He's got to know how to control Gennady Golovkin outside on the in the distance, okay? He also's got to know when not to sit down on the punch, when to sit down and get out, when to turn Gennady, when to never allow Gennady Golovkin to sit on his punches. He's really got to have such ring generalship that the gods of all boxing blessed him on that night. Because I tell
you this,
man, go for it.
Let me ask you this. Who wins between Dominic Wade and Willie the Mongoose? What was the guy's last name? Willie Mongoose Monroe Jr. Who wins in that fight between Dominic Wade and Willie Monroe?
I would probably pick Monroe.
That's grim.
There you go. That was his last fight, even though it was a fight that the guy, you know, Golovkin said that he let him hit him because he wanted to give a show. Who knows? You know, Willie Monroe did have a little bit of success. He was able to box a little bit. And that's what Dominic Wade needs to do. I mean, forget everything else. You need to box Gennady Golovkin. If you go toe-to-toe with him, you're not going to beat him. You know, you need to box and you need to try to stay away from him but land punches at the same time. And that's something that's nearly impossible to do, you know. And you,
he's got a lot of, you know, dude, he's got to watch a lot of tape of Bernard Hopkins fighting Tito Trinidad. If anything, he's got to watch some tape. The only difference, though, is that as much as I love Tito, Tito was so readable because you knew exactly what Tito's plan was. Come forward, cut the ring off, and throw his right hand. Where Gennady has thrown a little bit more in the package, okay? So Dominic would have to turn him, hold him, grab him at the right moments so that he couldn't get off. I can't picture it. And also, if you look at Dominic, he's not a very big guy. Gabriel, I don't know if you watch any tape on him. He's not a very big – he's not an imposing middleweight. He's a very middleweight.
You just put a harsh on Gabriel's Menlo by mentioning that Bernard Hopkins could have been in that fight.
Did he hang up? Or did he
– I was actually trying to unmute the phone, but my tears were in the way. Hasn't Keto suffered now?
Yeah, you just put a harsh on his medal right there.
I mean, seriously, now I have to smoke some. I haven't even had any all show long. I've been cooking dinner. Leave Tito out of this. Let's get to the fight schedule.
Let's go.
Go ahead. Let's hear.
God damn it, I'm all mad now. Friday, April 15th, Turning Stone Casino in Verona, New York, Showtime. Nikolai Potapov versus Stephen Young, bantamweights, 10 rounds. Yuri Bernardo versus Mason Menard, lightweights, 8 rounds, and some other fighters. The Blasco,
you know,
Theater. The fight.
Wait, hold on. Before you move on, you know what those four fighters have in common?
What?
What?
Nobody knows who the hell they are. but I'm kind of impressed that they're showing bantamweights on Showtime. They haven't done that in a long time.
Well, I think that BJ Flores is going to be very upset because if it's a fighter that doesn't reach a certain level, and that's
right,
you know, height, he doesn't want to see them. Anyways, Belasco Theater, Los Angeles, California, Estrella TV, Jesus Soto Cross versus Yoshihiro Kamagai, welterweights, 10 rounds, and Vyacheslav Shabransky versus Derek Finley, Slava Shabransky being an ex-WSB fighter, a Matador all-action guy. He's a light heavyweight. They're going 10 rounds. That's a hell of a double bill there. That could be fight of the week, potentially a fight of the year between Jesus Soto Cross and Yoshihiro Kamagai. I hope that Soto Cross just wears jeans and sneakers into the ring.
Also on that card, it'll be the pro debut of Genaro Gámez, who is a pretty decorated amateur from San Diego. So he just signed with Golden Boy, and he's going to be fighting in his pro debut in that fight card. So I'm pretty excited to see that.
Yeah, I saw that and stuff. But really quick, man, who do you guys got for that fight with Soto Carras and Kamigai? Is that how you say his name? Kamig? Whatever.
Now you're worried about saying somebody's name right after butchering Golovkin and Kovalev and all these guys. Now you're worried about Yoshihiro Kamigai? Jesus.
Kamigai, let's go. Who do you got there, Felipe?
Dave is big in Japan. He's got to appease his big fan. I think the fans are going to win. It's hard to say. You know, it's one of those ones. What have these guys got left, you know?
Yeah.
I lean towards Jesus Soto Carras, but he could get overwhelmed. I just think it's one of those ones. I'm going to sound like a promoter. The fans win.
I think
Kamigai is a little fresher, to be quite honest with you. Soto Carras has been in a lot of wars, great wars, wars that we thanked him for. And Kamigai has too, but not as many as this guy. And I think that Kamigai is a naturally bigger guy. I think Soto Carras is not a natural welterweight. I think he's coming up from a lower weight class, not for this fight, but in the originally in his career. So I think I've seen Kamigai up close, and he's a pretty big guy. So I'm going to go with Kamigai.
He's been a welterweight for quite some time. I mean, remember, he used to be a sparring partner for Margarito, too. So
yeah, you're
he's
right.
been there.
Yeah, you're right.
The only time he was outsized was when he got in with Gabriel Rosado. Remember, he decided to go up to 154, and that's when he looked tiny. He looked small, you know. So
I've seen both guys up close, and I think Kamigai is the bigger guy. I think, and there's really not much difference between both guys. I mean, they both have the same style. They both come forward. They don't take a step back. They're warriors. So if one is going to have advantage over the other, I think it might be size wise and as far as being a little bit fresher. And I think I'm going to go with Kamigai on those 2 points.
How I look at it is who lands the more body shots and uppercuts in this fight, and whoever does that and stays consistent is going to be the winner in that fight. You know, it's going to be an up and close poor man's version of Jose Luis Castillo and Diego Corrales. I can't wait for it. But I'm going to go with Soto Carras, man. I think he can pull it off. I think he has it in him to continue to do that. He's been in a lot of wars, like you guys did mention. But I think being familiar and being in that in those type of wars is what's going to help him get through some of it. You know, hopefully his body helps him get through it. I think his mind is there, but I'm not sure if his body is. But I think it might be just enough. So take there. Gabriel, let's continue on with that fight schedule, brother.
All right, then. Saturday night. Excellent fight. PBC on NBC, Errol Spence Jr. versus Chris Algieri, welterweights, 12 rounds, and Christoph Glowacki versus Steve Cunningham, cruiserweight action, 12 rounds, and Marcus Brown takes on Radovoje Kalajic, lightweights, 10 rounds. Also on that night, Foxwoods Resort Casino in Mansion, Tucket, Connecticut, and Showtime, Gary Russell Jr. takes on Patrick Highland, featherweights, 12 rounds, Jose Pedraza versus Stephen Smith, super featherweights, 12 rounds. And also later that evening on Unumas, Felix Verdejo versus Jose Luis Rodriguez and Christopher Diaz versus Ray Jimenez, featherweights. So there you go.
There you go. So what do you think about Spence?
I got Spence over Algieri. I think he bangs him out. We're going to find out if his power is real. If he does bang Chris Algieri out. I mean, granted, the guy's put some miles on the last few years, but he's a big guy. He's a strong guy. I wonder if he's going to be at this level. Rodell, I think, too, I'll make a prediction out of this fight. We're already starting to see the interviews that Derek James, the trainer of Errol Spence, is going to be everybody's new favorite trainer, and they're all going to be all up on him. He's a young guy who's come up with Spence. He's also got, I think, Rob Brandt. But if you put together a good-looking fighter as Spence is, and Brandt looks pretty good himself, this guy could be one to talk about. So I expect Spence, who I think is the real deal, to really shine in this performance. But the thing I do worry about him, although they've been showing him the big time, you know, going back to that Olympic performance where he had the letdown thinking that he'd won, then he'd lost, and they let him fight, and he mentally let the moment go away and came out flat. I want to see him perform big time on a big stage like this.
Felipe, what you got?
Yeah, I'm going with Spence as well. I think this guy is a blue chip prospect. I think he's a future star. And this is the kind of fight that you have to win. I mean, a former world champion, a guy that has faced a lot more experienced guys than you have. But if Errol Spence, and a guy, if you notice, his first name is Errol, a name that we don't really see that much. You know, Floyd, not comparing to Floyd, but Floyd, that's a kind of weird name too for a modern type of guy. You don't see those names that often, Floyd and Errol. So that kind of puts it, you know, to me in the same pain. But as far as that, I think that
so Felipe,
kind of fight.
You don't see Felipe's name around as often anymore. You know, I don't know what that
don't.
Means.
But that's the win. That's the win that this is the win that is going to show us who this guy is. I think in everybody's
right.
in a lot of fighters in the guys in a lot of fighters' career, there's that one win. You know, you're being built up, and all of a sudden you say, okay, this is, if you beat this guy, then we know what we have, and we can start trying to push you to a higher level now. And this is that fight for Errol Spence.
You know, the big criticism that PBC had and Al Haymon have shown is that they don't know how to master prospects. They don't know how to get them over that hill so that we know where to put them at. And I have to say, when it comes to Golden Boy, what you had said to Gabriel, who really wins on Friday night are going to be the fans. And who really Saturday night finally is going to be Al Haymon and the PBC, because they actually did something correct. There's something correct in how they did the promotion here. Spence is finally going to get that shot of finding out where is he at. And it's a great move because they're getting Algerio, who's not a big puncher, but can clearly box and has been there with some of the top names and has showed that he could compete with some of the top names, Pacquiao and Khan. That all tells us, where do we put Spence at? Does he go on to the next move? So if the fans are winning on Friday, if Spence is to succeed, PBC and Al Haymon won on Saturday. So very interesting here, guys. You know. Anyways, fight fans, as always, tune in every Wednesday. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. As always here on Leaving the Ring, I enjoy boxing talk. If you miss it, don't worry about it. You'll catch the archives here on the show. If you got any questions or you want to, continue on the conversation after the show, you can always reach us on Twitter or you can email us at leavingtheringatgmail.com. If not, you can call in Wednesday night or you can call on Monday night on the next round. You can't call on Tuesday night because, unfortunately, Felipe Leon's In the Square Circle is not a live show, which a lot of folks have been asking me, why is this pre-recorded? Why is he not doing live? You have to ask Felipe about this. He's a baller, man. He ain't got time to be doing stuff like that. Isn't that right, Felipe? Tell him, man. You travel from Tijuana back to San Diego, and then wherever you go, whatever your drug running and stuff like that, man. They don't even know, bro. They don't know.
Hey. They don't know. But hey, don't put that on blast.
Anyways, Fight Fans, hey, thanks for tuning in. Hey, remember, don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Felipe, Gabriel, Fight Fans, hey, thanks, guys, as always, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.